Committee on Student Achievement and School Accountability. We will open a work session on House Bill 2286. And Janet, would you read us the summary, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2286, and you should have the two amendments. These were developed by Representative Schrader, the sponsor of the bill. And they will, they replace the original bill and establish an ESL and bilingual education grant program through the Department of Education. Basically, it's $1 million in general funds for teacher tuition reimbursement grants and $4 million for supplemental instructional programs. It outlines how the department would determine which schools, districts receive the grants, and the total, again, the one plus the $4 million would be a $5 million general fund appropriation. It would have a referral to the Ways and Means Committee.
Okay, thank you, Janet. We have, or I have polled the committee on the House Bill 2286-2s, and we do not have the votes passed out of committee. However, I wanted to discuss to see if there's any interest on the bill summary indicates the appropriates $1 million of general funds for teacher tuition reimbursement. We have heard testimony that it's important that teachers of ESL be given additional training, that would improve the quality of the program. Looking at the dash two amendments, I think we're talking then line 21 on page one. I think that's the same thing. The letter A, reimburse teachers for tuition costs associated with completing an English as a second language or a bilingual teaching program. So I guess the chair is interested to see if there's any interest in bringing this back in this form as an amendment. And the other $4 million portion of it appears to be something that we're not going to be able to do. So if there's any discussion on that, I'd be happy to entertain that discussion.
Do we know how much that is?
It would be $1 million in the general fund, and it would not be from the $5.2 billion that...
It's outside that.
It's outside the common school fund, or the school funding formula money, yes. Representative Barnhart, you're frowning.
Well, I'm just wondering how we get there from here. How we get outside the 5.2.
That's
curious about
question,
that.
And of course, this does have a referral to the Ways and Means, and so... I suppose that is the answer. Ways and Means would have to decide.
If I could just comment on the idea. Generally speaking, I am opposed to carve-outs. So anything that would reduce the 5.2 and make it into a specific fund and reduce the flexibility of school districts, I think is a bad idea. On the other hand, I'm in favor of add-ons.
Of course.
Because it produces additional funds for schools to function when they are utterly broke now. If there's a way of guaranteeing it being an add-on, I'd probably support it. If it looks like a carve-out, I probably won't.
Well, if we wanted to move on this, Representative, I would think that we would craft an amendment that would specify, just as you have indicated, an add-on and not a carve-out, so to speak. Representative Nelson?
Yes, Mr. Chair, it is my belief, and from the testimony we heard, that the odds of us ever mastering our English as a second language is going to require additional training. We just don't have the staff, so I would be willing to go with you on that amendment.
Thank you. Any other discussion or comment?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Nolan.
Mr. Chair, it appears from your count that I was in the minority on the bill because I favored the bill. And if we can get part of it instead of all of it this time, I'd support your effort to do that.
Okay. Well, we'll consider those discussion points and possibly we'll bring this back as an amendment. I'm certainly willing to look further into the situation because we did hear some excellent testimony that would suggest that that improves ESL training for teachers would be a very valuable addition to our school programs. So with that then, there's no other discussion, we will close the public hearing on House Bill 2286 and we'll open a public hearing on House Bill 2004. And Janet, I think it's your turn.
Mr. Chair, there was a hearing on the original House Bill 2004 on March 6th, and it's the original bill specified data that would be included in school and school district performance report cards. The original bill also required that 50% of the measure or grade given for a school student performance be based on the certificate of national mastery assessment. You have at your place this morning the dash 7 and dash 8 amendments. And those amendments specified a different list of required elements in the score report card. If you have I'll explain the difference between the two amendments, but I wanted to show you the list first. That begins on page 2 in both the dash 7s and dash 8s. You can start with the dash 7s. What's listed on the top of page 2 are for school report cards, starting in sub 3 in the bold. And if you go down to sub 4, about mid-page, line 19, this is what's in school district report cards. So that's the additional features on the school report card are in sub 3, and on the school district report card are on sub 4. The difference between the dash 7s and the dash 8, you'll see on line 17 in the dash 8.
On what page?
Page 1. And they delete the assignment of an overall grade to the school. And that's the grade that's on the front of the report card, a rating of the school's excellent, satisfactory. So the change on line 17 is the difference between the dash 7s and the dash 8s. I wanted to point out that these amendments were developed by a work group that Representative Backlund asked to meet. The work group met about 3 times with the Speaker's office, and Harvey Matthews is here, as well as the Department of Education. And they were both involved with the work group, as well as Representative Barnhart and Representative Hobson.
Thank you very much. We have several people who testify. Nancy, I hope I say this right. I've heard your name many times. Nancy Heidegman. All right, I'm sorry. And Harvey, Harvey Matthews, will you be interested in coming up as well? Okay, very good. We'll have this panel, and then and Wilma, we have your notes. So.
Good morning. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Nancy Heiligman, Director of School Finance, Data and Analysis for the Department of Education. With me today is Brian Gong, from the National Center for Assessment, who has been instrumental in working with Oregon on developing our report card. And so we were very happy that Brian was in Salem today and could attend the hearing with us. First, the department would like to thank the bill's sponsor, House Speaker Mark Simmons, and his staff for their commitment to the improvement of the report card and continuing to make it a more useful tool for parents. We would also like to acknowledge the work of Representatives Barnhart and Hobson, who met several times to work on amendments to the bill. The report card is an essential element of the department's educational accountability system. The purpose of the accountability system is to drive continuous academic improvement, to ensure responsible action, and to identify excellence in schools. We believe that House Bill 2004, as amended, will help to strengthen our efforts in the department to improve the report card. I would like to mention that in the written testimony that I have prepared, the department is supporting the Dash 6 amendment. There have been additional amendments drafted, and we are supporting the Dash 8 amendments this morning. The bill with the Dash 8 amendments clarifies that parents are the primary audience for the report card. The report card is first and foremost a report to parents, and the bill lists several types of information that parents have expressed as being important to them to know about their schools. It also adds the participation rate on state assessment tests as a criteria for determining school ratings. We believe that that is also very important, that if every student is to be successful in our schools, then it is important that every student is included in our state assessment test, and that that is reflected in our report cards. The Dash 8 amendments also eliminate the overall rating for each school. We also provided you with a handout, a little graphic that explains the overall rating. Right now, schools receive ratings in three areas, student performance, student behavior, school characteristics, and in addition to that, they also receive an overall rating. In each area, they're rated on level of performance as well as rate of improvement. We believe that eliminating the overall rating for the school would create more focus on these three areas of rating and support our purpose more strongly of continuous improvement in academic areas. We believe eliminating the overall rating would simplify the formula. It would make it easier to understand and increase the credibility of the report card. The overall rating right now is kind of an average of apples and oranges, and it's often difficult to explain. And in a few cases, with any mathematical formula, and we've also had this case in the report card, that some of the overall ratings just don't always pass the common sense test. In summary, I'd like to say that the department does support House Bill 2004 with the Dash 8 amendments. We want to emphasize that the report card continues to be a work in progress, and we see this bill as reinforcing our efforts at continuous improvement. I'd like to turn it over to Brian to make a few remarks, and I think he can give you just a real brief idea of how Oregon's report card measures up on the national stage as well as in Oregon.
Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm glad to be here. Our organization works with about 10 states that are involved in accountability.
Excuse me, Brian. For the record, could you give us your name?
Oh, yes. Yeah. I'm Brian Gong. I'm the Associate Director of the National Center for Assessment, and have been working with the Oregon Department of Education for the past 2 years since the initiation of the Report Card Project.
Thank you.
There are about 38 states in the United States now that have something like report card or a rating system for schools. As I mentioned, our organization, which is a nonprofit organization, is working with about 10 of them directly, and we're involved in indirectly with a number of the other states. I think Oregon has a number of characteristics that make it somewhat unique, and the report card has a different feel in Oregon. One is that I think Oregon talks about continuous improvement, but I think it really walks the walk as well as talking the talk. That context for improvement is systemic. It's not just something that's given to the department, but it's clear that there are many groups that are involved in looking at how to improve across the different agencies. So there's a K-16 project, the Educational Leadership Project involves a number of other things that are very unusual Most states don't have that comprehensive systemic look. It's largely positive. I think that this is not the case as it is in many states, especially in the southern states, where they feel that education is in crisis and that it will blow up in the next few years. I think the feeling here is that Oregon has a firm base to build upon, that people are not satisfied with it, but that it's not the case that it's going to dissolve. There's a good balance in the process, I think, specifically the issue between simplicity of information or focus, as well as a comprehensive nature. I think the amendment or the bill as amended gives some of that focus. It tries to give more information, but also creates a focus for action. The audience is really important, that it's parents. And schools and districts clearly look at these as well, but parents are a crucial audience to bring in. That's often not the case in other states as well, but they've looked at schools and districts as the only audience. I think a third characteristic is that Oregon is a relatively higher performing state in terms of student achievement. And while it's true that there is certainly room to grow, I think the approach has been on establishing standards and then raising them in an incremental and reasonable way. I think that there are some other states that have been in the news recently where they've drawn very high standards and then have not been able to garner the political will or public support to sustain those. And I think that as it's playing out across the nation, having a clear target, some reasonable ways to approach it are the ways that most states are finding as successful. The bill as amended brings in additional information. It clarifies the focus, and then it eliminates the overall rating. The overall rating has been not extremely, but a little bit controversial. And I think that as we've looked at the way that schools have used it, as Yancey has said, eliminating it will allow schools or promote schools focusing on each of the other three areas. Right now, it's a strong rating. They may not look at the other areas that they have to improve. And so we feel that eliminating the overall rating does promote additional focus on areas that schools have to strengthen in their own local areas. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions? Representative Nelson.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Mr. Gong, or is it Dr. Gong?
I do have a doctor.
Okay, Dr. Gong, I see him. Got it. It would be wonderful to get your comments in writing.
Okay.
It would be really good for us, wouldn't it? And follow up, please.
Follow up.
And Nancy and Mr. Gong, is it possible we could ever change the word behavior, since that's in my district, that's the one that makes everybody nuts, because it's really a measurement of attendance, not student behavior? I mean, how does that have to get changed?
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, that would be possible. That would just mean we'd have -9 amendments that we could
so
do.
So you're saying we could do it?
Yeah, we could do that, yes.
Okay. Great.
Nancy, from your perspective, how has in the 2 years that the school report card has been issued, how, from your perspective, what has been the public reaction?
Mr. Chair, I believe that the reaction has been really very positive in terms of raising the level of conversation about school performance in Oregon. I think there have been some mixed feelings. Schools who didn't receive a high rating, we sometimes were upset about it. Particularly, I think some schools who received satisfactory ratings when they thought that they should have been strong or exceptional. And I believe that over time, we're going to get better at doing this, that we're learning. It was something that was implemented very quickly with just 6 months, and we are undergoing a pretty extensive process right now working with stakeholder groups to continue to improve it. I think in the department, it is really focused us on supporting the lower performing schools, and I think that's been a big plus. So I think overall that it's positive in terms of accountability and this whole continuous improvement cycle.
Has there been a lot of controversy in with people in not being able to connect the current way of a single grade, exceptional, strong, satisfactory, with the criteria to arrive at that number or that grade? That's kind of my impression.
Mr. Chair, I think that it has been probably our biggest hurdle. And that's why we are supporting the Dash 8 amendments. It's really an issue of credibility, and what we've found is there we're rating three different areas, and people value those areas differently, and they value level of performance versus improvement differently. And so if this overall rating doesn't happen to average out to what I value, then the report card loses credibility for me in that particular case. And I think that's what's happened in a number of cases where people tend to just dismiss the report card if the rating, the overall rating, doesn't make sense to them. So we think it would really help increase credibility for the report card.
Brian, I might say thank you for coming out to our great state of Oregon, and I was very pleased to hear your report that our report card is rather unique, and in general, you regard Oregon as a high-performing state. That's excellent news. So you haven't quite reached the Clint Eastwood proportion of go ahead and make my day, but you've started, and so I appreciate your being here and hearing from you. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We also have Wilma Wells from Confederation of School Administrators, and Harvey, do you want to come up as well? Or there's three chairs, so.
Chair Baplan and members of the committee, I'm Wilma Wells. I represent the Confederation of Oregon School Administrators, and before I worked for the Confederation of Oregon School Administrators, I was a school administrator in Salem, and I flatter myself that I have a notion of what parents want to know about their children and about their school. I believe that the change in what's being suggested in how the school is graded overall, that you don't look at the whole school, but you'll look at what the students are doing, will be a much more effective way to deal with parents. My experience with parents was what the parents who were in the school wanted to know how their students had done on achievement tests. But it was the parents from outside the school that didn't understand the school that were more influenced by those achievement tests. What happened was I would have parents who were thinking about moving their children into the school where I was principal when it was a low-income area and their students moved all the time. And they would say to me, I see, Mrs. Wells, that your school has had a poor rating on the achievement tests. And why do you think that happened? And I could say to them, because we have, when we test students in the fourth grade, then test those that same classroom again in the sixth grade, we are testing one-third of the students who, in fact, were tested in the fourth grade. We are not testing apples, but we're testing apples and oranges. So I think this will be a real improvement on the current statute. My experience is what parents are most interested in is how their school has, the ones in that school, how their school has done on the achievement test, or in this case, the state assessment. And for that reason, I believe that if you approve the Dash 8 amendments, you will improve our present system of state report to parents about the schools. Thank you.
Thank you. Harvey.
Thank you, Chair Backlund. My name is Harvey Matthews. I work with Speaker Mark Simmons as his legislative director, and I'm here to support the Dash 7 amendments. We have overall agreement on everything about this one little section, and it's such a good work group that I hate to draw attention to the one area of slight disagreement. But we want to also provide you the opportunity to make a choice between having an overall grade or not to have an overall grade. The Dash 7 amendments do collect information and do provide one overall grade, and it does mix apples and oranges. But is an apple orange a great flavor, you know? With one grade, it focuses attention, I think, on the school as a whole. And if we divide that up in three different areas, then, as was previously mentioned, whatever the school administrator believes is the, because they value these different areas differently, if I've got, you know, two satisfactory ratings and one unsatisfactory rating as an administrator, I'm going to focus on my good qualities for my community. And that's laudable, and that's what I would do if I was a school administrator. But if we really want change in our schools, if we really want to draw attention to improvement, then I think it is important to have a clear mandate, a focused one grade, a blunt instrument, if you will. So that is what the speaker would advocate, and that's I think he also understands and appreciates the value of Dash 8, having three different ones, but it's a tough policy question, and leave it up to you guys to make a value judgment. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions? Representative Hobson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Harvey, did you have any discussions that maybe in the future with an overall grade, if we could find better pieces to include with that? Because I think I agree with others who've expressed the concern that some of this information, for instance, as Representative Nelson mentioned, the attendance, you can, and I know you've heard all these arguments, but the whole concept that maybe if somebody excels in performance and they have lousy attendance, who gives a whit, that sort of thing. So is there discussion that if we were to leave it out this time and kind of put it on the back burner until we could develop something that was more reflective, because I understand what you're trying to get at, but some characteristics that are more reflective of that, could we put it back in later, or maybe never visit this again? I'm putting you on the spot.
Chair Backlund, Representative Hobson, that is a good idea, and I'm not sure that we would ever put it back in once it's out. It's very difficult to put something more stringent into a statute in my short experience. I think the speaker would prefer to work with what we have and keep the overall grade and refine it and keep Dr. Gong employed for longer.
Would either of you care to comment on Representative Nelson's suggestion about changing the description of the one school characteristic? That was Representative Nelson. That was behavior and reduce or eliminate behavior. Get rid of that word and substitute for attendance. Okay, any comments there?
Chair Blackmond, and with regard to Representative Nelson's suggestion, I think it would be clearer to families. Mm-hmm. However, we're quite happy with 8.
Okay. So you must prefer the Dash 8 to the 7. Any other? Representative Hobson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And I'm not sure Harvey or Nancy or Dr. could answer this. The student behavior actually includes attendance and dropout, correct?
Chair Backlund, Representative Hobson, yes, it does. And also with the Dash 7 or 8 amendments, it would include the expulsions and safety rates. So I think the previous bill in 99 focused not on some of the safety issues that parents have said they want to know about.
So are you saying, Harvey, that now that Representative Hobson's brought this out, that the current term student behavior is all right with with the speaker, as you understand it?
Well, I would say, Chair Backlund, I would say that in the previous report card, that behavior probably wasn't an accurate description of what they were judging, testing, and describing here. But now with these amendments, if you choose to accept them, that behavior would encompass what we're trying to get at.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Before you leave, I too would like to compliment you, Mr. Matthews, for the work group, work that you and Representative Barnhart and Representative Hobson and Nancy put together. Janet kept me informed, and I must say that it seemed to have gone very well, and I think that's great.
Chair Backlund, you were wise in giving us those two representatives, and I think we could solve any other educational problems. Very well. Thank you.
Do we have others who would like to testify? Mr. Marshall, please.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, good morning. John Marshall, representing the Oregon School Boards Association, and I'd like to briefly lend our support to the Dash 8 amendments. If you think about what Ms. Heiligman said in terms of the overall grade to a school and trying to take those various factors, student performance, student behavior, and school characteristics, and then draw conclusions about the overall rating that you want to give to an entire school, think about your five words: exceptional, strong, satisfactory, low, or unacceptable. Those are the only five words you could use to describe a school. And I would argue that every school, regardless of their overall rating, there are pockets of excellence. And to give one of five words to describe an entire school has the potential for attaching a stigma to not only the staff, but the students, the parents, and that entire community. So I think by eliminating an overall grade, it will enhance the report card and cause a deeper analysis of, yes, there are some areas of weakness we have to work on, but there are also some positive areas that we should draw to. We all know the power of the headline. The story, the headline grabs you. Well, the report card comes and it says low or unsatisfactory. That's all we remember. We don't look deeper to see that there are pockets of excellence here and there are some good things going on. For those of you that are new to the legislative process, there are interests that after the legislative session is over with, will look at your voting record on the floor and give you a grade. And that grade will be the criteria by which those interests judge your performance. And I would argue that that doesn't tell the whole story. While you may disagree with us and your voting record shows up poorly, that doesn't tell about your interest in the issue, your accessibility, your willingness to discuss, your willingness to listen, and so forth. So I would argue that one of five words to describe a whole school really defeats the purpose of the report card. The purpose of the report card is to give parents primarily information, so hopefully it will enhance their involvement. But if they see that the school is poor, they walk away rather than looking at the report card and seeing that there are some positive things going on which they can build and perhaps carry those positive aspects over into the areas of weakness. So I would strongly encourage you to take a look at the Dash 8 and support them. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Representative Barnhart.
Thank you. Mr. Marshall, can't we also flip your argument on its head? In my district, there are schools every year who test excellent on the overall score. And yet, if you look carefully at the other items in the grades or at the subparts that go into those grades, you can find places where further improvement would be useful and where a wise principal would focus effort for further improvement. Isn't your argument applied just as well to that situation in which the overall score is excellent, but the principal ought to be focusing in places where continuing improvement would be useful even in that situation. And the score in that situation may be just as misleading in some ways as the one in which there are areas in which things are going very well, and but the score is not good. Overall score is not good.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Barnhart, I would argue that the overall score of exceptional for the school would cause perhaps the staff and the community to become complacent that everything's fine without doing a thorough more thorough analysis of areas of weakness. And I think by having individual grades for specific areas causes not only to identify those areas of excellence, but also to point out those areas of weakness.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Marshall, before you leave, I think one thing we probably have all gotten from your testimony is that in the next campaign, assuming we're running and we get criticized for our voting list, we'll refer, I'm sure, to your comments that we were much more effective than the voting record would indicate.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, we do not prepare a voting record for the reasons that I've described.
Yeah. Okay. Very good. Very good. Well, thank you. Are there others who would like to testify? Okay. Well, I think I'm interested in moving this bill, so we will close the public hearing on House Bill 2004, and we'll open a work session on House Bill 2004. Representative Barnhart, I had already been communicated with by Representative Starr, so I'm going to call on him first. Representative Starr?
Mr. Chair, I'd move the Dash 8 amendments to House Bill 2004.
Representative Starr moves the Dash 8 amendments to House Bill 2004. Discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Starr.
I appreciate the testimony we've had this morning and the work that was put into drafting these amendments. I think that it's important that if the parents are the target of this communication, that we maybe don't make it too easy for them, that we cause them to dig a little deeper than maybe just a one-word overall kind of rating, and cause them to have to dig into the information a little bit deeper.
Representative Barnhart.
I want to support that argument, and I'd say it in a slightly different way. When these report cards come out, there's enormous interest in the community about them, and they're always reported in the newspaper, in the local paper, at least where I come from. And I suspect that's true all over the state. Newspapers like to simplify things, and they like to get it down to the simplest possible statement. And if we give them an overall score to write about, that's what they'll write about. If the simplest we get is 3 scores, they're going to have to get to a slightly more complex level when they report the scores for the very individual schools. And I think that's all to the good. I think that improves the information available to the public about our schools, and so I strongly support Representative Starr's comments and the Dash 8 amendments.
Thank you. Representative Hobson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I too support the Dash 8 amendments, and for a lot of the reasons that have been said, particularly Mr. Marshall. I thought if you have your children, and you certainly can rate your children, we all do it all the time, on a number of characteristics, some strong, some weak, some kids are messy. You don't want to come out with an overall grade that says, but, you know, on balance, the kid's not all quite that good. I think we want to focus on the area, again, that isn't good. And there's even a criteria or two in here, the school characteristics representing the percent of the students taking the state test. I would argue very strongly that should be 100%, period, end of discussion. That should not be a factor that is factored into the overall rating of the school or the district. Everybody should be taking the test, and I think we had some examples of where there was some selective testing, and I don't know anybody that really defends that anymore. So I certainly agree with the Dash 8 amendments and would support them.
Representative Nolan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Once again, it sounds like I may be in the minority here. I think we go through life getting a single grade on any sort of thing as we do. It's not uncommon for people's high school or college careers to be summarized in a single GPA. On our jobs, when we get out of school, we get typically a single meeting, and it's often a yes or no, pass or fail. I'm not at all persuaded that taking away a single rating will force local media to report all three of them. It may instead allow them to make their own single rating in a way that we won't like at all. Or it may result in a decision on an editorial level that there's too much information and we're not going to report it at all. So I will be opposing the amendment, but I do support the underlying bill.
Committee, we are missing, what, two of our members. I think they will be returning fairly shortly. Is that right, Janet?
Yes, Mr. Chair. They're both in a different committee testifying.
Okay. So perhaps we should wait for them to return, and then we can recess this, and when they come back, we will vote on the dash eights. So staff then will take a we'll recess on House Bill 2004. And we'll open a public hearing on House Bill 2598. And Janet, if you can summarize for us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2598, and you were distributed the dash three amendments yesterday, but there is a revised staff measure summary this morning. I did the summary without having the amendments yet, and so I had to make a couple of changes. The dash three amendments do replace the original bill, and they create a two-year task force on special education and school finance. The membership of the task force is specified at 22 persons that are familiar with federal and state programs for special education students. The 22 members include the superintendent of public instruction, the associate superintendent of the Office of Special Education, 8 members appointed by the governor, 6 members appointed by the Senate president, and 6 members appointed by the Speaker of the House. You can read either in the summary or in the bill where those members are to represent. The addition in the dash three amendments, if you had looked at the dash two amendments, is that an additional person that representing the Department of Human Services, so there's a good connection between services that a child receives in school and services that they receive outside of school. There's a better connection there with that representative. The task force is directed in the amendments to review current funding and to study a number of things. Again, added in the dash three amendments is to study not only the mediation but the complaint resolution process. And the Department of Education is directed to staff the task force, and the task force would sunset on July 1st, 2003.
Thank you. With that, Lynn Lundquist, are you preparing to come up and testify?
Thank you, Chair Backman and members of the committee. I'm Lynn Lundquist, and I represent the Oregon Business Association this morning. I think you are becoming more aware of that association, and some of you attended our annual meeting the other night. The reason we're supporting this particular bill is because education is one of the main planks that we have within our association, and we also have the plank, if you will, that it's a bipartisan group that simply wants to make things happen, and certainly in the area of education, I think that's a very valid situation. So you may be aware that I was highly involved in the quality education model last session, and actually started the session before. The reason I mentioned that is because when we were putting the quality education model together, we had a subcommittee that worked in the area of special education. And frankly, we didn't get very far. We always felt, all of us that were involved in that, that was an open-ended situation that we had never really grasped and had our hands around it. And so the thought came to us, we ought to continue on. Actually, it would be an improvement not only to the model but to the whole education K-12 system. And when you look at when you analyze it and realize that 20% of the $5.2 billion, roughly $1 billion, is in the area of special education, we're talking about serious money here. And so we think it's only appropriate that there be a task force established that looks at the overall area of special education. But I want to just ask you a few questions to sort of, I guess, give you a flavor of why we think this is doable and is right. I would challenge anyone to give me a confidence level that they have in the 2.0 multiplier for special education students. Are the non-special education students being affected because of the dollars that are going into the special education arena? Is there a relationship there? Are students moved out of the special education status once they are in that status? Are they moved on for those who have that opportunity? Are schools coping with the high cost, low incident students that attend their schools? How do we ensure that the students that they're receiving adequate services for their special education needs in a cost-effective manner? And are human resources dollars and education dollars intertwined here, and do we really sometimes know which area is tracking in regard to those dollars? I don't have any preconceived ideas of answers to those questions, but I think those are very valid questions and point out the fact that this is an area that I think needs a significant look at it. The committee administrator spoke a little bit about who's on the committee. I want to just emphasize that we've tried to make this as diverse and as overall encompassing as possible. If you look more specifically, you'll see there are teachers, there are special education directors, there are principals, school board members, parents, Department of Education, Education Service Districts, Department of Human Services, OEA, OSDA, COSA, and business people. We've tried to make it a very broad based group because I happen to believe, and I'm probably biased to that, because of the success of the QEM, I think that's what was the success of the QEM, was the fact we had a very broad support base, as well as legislators, and I want to leave you out of there. There are two House members and two Senate members on this committee. Two points, and then I'll finish. Senate Bill 519 has $150,000 in that bill that has passed the committee, and I do not believe it has passed the Senate floor yet. But that bill deals with the revenue formula and other dollars associated with it. That's on the Senate side now. And in that bill, there's $150,000 put in there specifically for a study of the special education arena. And interestingly enough, COSA and OSBA and OEA, who's also in this bill, I think I failed to mention that particular association, had gotten together without Oregon Business Association knowing it and said, we must look at the special education arena. And so they went together and said, we need some dollars for that. And so we actually uniquely are working on it together. Now somebody, and particularly I've talked to one of the members on this panel earlier yesterday, saying that, well, where's the $150,000 coming from? It's coming from the state school fund. And there could be a little bit of, resistance to that. But let me put it in what I think is a proper perspective. That's 25 cents. Once again, that's 25 cents per student in the state that would be taken from the common school, from the state school fund to support this study. And we're talking about $1 billion that we're working with here. I think that's a worthy investment. And lastly, the bill requires that there's a deliverable. The task force would work with, during the interim, report to the education committees, and then it's requested that there be pre-session filed the findings of this task force. So this is not just a study without an end game. Mr. Chairman, thank you for the opportunity, and I hope we can have support of your panel.
Thank you, Mr. Lundquist. Questions?
Just a quick question. Did you say the $150,000 amounted to 25 cents per student? Did I hear that correctly?
That's correct.
Thank you.
Panel, I might say, or committee members, I might say that Representative Hobson and I got in at the kind of the tag end of the development of the quality education model in 1999, and so we were able to sit in on a number of meetings and see the task force conclusions and final development of that quality education model. And I think the quality education model has had a lot of impact on this year's, this biennium's proposed budget for K-12. And so I'm kind of, I'm really kind of excited about the potential for what House Bill 2598 has. And so I'm hoping that this is something that will be able to move ahead and will become very productive. So a little editorial, and thank you, Lynn, for...
Thank you, Chairman Backman.
Catherine White, excuse me.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Catherine White, and I'm with the Oregon Developmental Disabilities Council, which is a federally funded council that focuses on policy and systems change for people with developmental disabilities. And we're here today in support of the creation of the Special Education Task Force. I need to say that I'm also a parent of a 22-year-old with autism and significant disabilities, and I've seen both the good and the bad in special education on a personal level. Oregon has a long history of providing special education services to students with disabilities, but the right to education actually is relatively recent. However, many things have changed since the federal law mandated access to education for kids with disabilities. And I just wanted to point out some of those changes. One, we've seen a significant increase in the number of students identified as having disabilities. We've seen since the federal mandate for public education, the closure of our institutions in Oregon that used to house children with disabilities. Children with more significant disabilities and support needs are attending public schools. We're seeing more children who are medically fragile that are surviving than survived in the past and are receiving public education services. We've implemented some of the least restrictive environment portions of the federal law, which means that kids with significant disabilities are in regular classes, participating in regular school activities. And this is a change, a significant change from the past. And then, of course, all of the societal changes that affected public education in general also affect families who have children with disabilities. From the perspective of someone who works a great deal with families and with educators, we see coming from both of those groups, both of those interest groups, a recognition of significant challenges, including the lack of adequate staffing, lack of qualified staff, lack of ongoing in-service and funding to provide the training that people need, service delivery models that no longer appear to meet the needs, the impact of students with significant support needs in an increasingly adversarial relationship between families and school districts. We believe that Oregon is long overdue for reviewing this system. It was a system that has been put together piece by piece through the years, and it's time to really take a serious look at many of the elements of that special education system. We're pleased with the Dash 3s. We believe we really need to look at both the funding sources and the structure, the service delivery mechanisms, accountability, teacher preparation, which there have been some significant changes in the last few years in terms of special education teacher preparation, and we need to revisit some of those changes, and the school-parent relationship, and I think it's reflected talking about some of the mechanisms for conflict resolution. We would like to see the task force address a little bit some of those issues prior to the point that they reach the conflict resolution stages. We believe that the solutions to this current problems in special education, and as all of you know, we've seen numerous bills on solutions to parts of the system, but that this is an answer to looking at a comprehensive, taking a comprehensive look at the system, an honest and inclusive comprehensive look at the system, to come up with solutions that we can deal with during the next legislative session.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any questions? Well, very good. Well, we thank you for coming in and testifying. We appreciate that. Lori Wimmer-Whalen, please.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee members. For the record, Lori Wimmer-Whalen, representing Oregon Education Association and our 45,000 members who are teachers, classified members, and community college faculty in Oregon. We are here today in support of House Bill 2598 and the Dash 3 amendments. As Lynn Lundquist said, great minds seem to run on the same track, as the education community has been thinking about this very issue and this very way to address it for some months now, and has proposed it in other venues in this building. We'd like to thank the Oregon Business Association for actually being the final glue that made this all stick with respect to bringing this forward. We think that it's a great way of addressing the issues. We see the task force as part of a larger effort to fine-tune Oregon's school funding mechanisms. We believe that, especially given that the federal government sends down only pennies on the dollar with respect to funding the mandate of IDEA, to be honest, and as the incidence of special education need continues to grow, it's really very difficult to get a good handle on precisely what it is we're doing, whether we're funding it adequately. You've heard the remarks about the double weight factor and whether or not that's adequate, and low incidence, high needs kids, and what happens when a particular small school district, for example, has an unexpected influx of particularly expensive to educate kids. We've seen a lot of solutions that have been proposed without an adequate sense, I would say, of the full diagnosis of the problem. Confusion about whether it's educational services or therapeutic services we're talking about, which have wildly different costs associated with it. All of those are the range of problems that I think, frankly, we've all been somewhat confounded by as we try to look at policies that might address all of those issues and consistently and predictably and adequately fund the services to which these children are, of course, entitled. So, by design, we think that the task force is put together as the QEM originally was, with a lot of diversity of input, a lot of expertise, with a comprehensive plan, and with concrete output and objectives. And so we're pleased to be a part of that. That's why we support the Dash 2 or Dash 3 amendments, because it puts us back in to be at the table as well. And it's something that the Oregon Education Association has been keenly focused on in recent sessions, and some of you who've been around remember that we brought a bill in part to try to find a way to solve the paperwork problem associated with IEPs. So we are very much interested in being a party to this task force, and thank you for your support of the bill.
Thank you. Questions? Well, thank you very much. Mr. Lundquist, before I forget, I'm going to drop back to my old high school teacher days and ask for an assignment. You gave us a series of questions that you thought should be answered. Could you give that in writing to each of the panel members? I didn't keep up with the speed at which you spoke, so that would be helpful.
And Chair Backman, when are those due?
excellent point. We will make this an open-ended due assignment date.
Okay.
So we will look forward to quicker as being better than.
Okay, I'll try to. Like, okay.
I think that's very much in flux at this point. very good. Ozzie Rose, would you come up, please?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the director, I'm Ozzie Rose for the Confederation of Oregon School Administrators. And for those of you who have been around a while, I want you to record that I'm here supporting something. For those of you new, that won't be funny, but We are here in support of the proposal outlined by Mr. Lundquist. I also wanted to be very clear that the $150,000 out of the state school fund was our idea. It was on the table before Mr. Lundquist came into the building. We were proposing a study of some kind, and we mean in the Superintendent's Association. It's the first time in history that we proposed to take anything out of the state school fund, for those of you that are concerned about that issue. It's an extremely important issue to the overall funding and operation of our schools. You're well aware that back in the 70s, the federal government stepped in, and Oregon, by the way, was a little bit ahead of the federal government in saying that the services to children with disabilities was a right that they had, and we needed to meet it. We've always blamed it on the federal government, but our laws, by and large, have been a little bit ahead of what they have done. The feds have not funded what they say would fund. That's one criticism that we ought to deal with. But the issue is we have these children. They need to be served, and they need to be served well. And as they become a growing portion of our obligation in our schools and our money gets tighter and so forth, people start looking at individual things. It does the 2.0 and the formula work. Special ed teachers have too big a load? Are the legal costs outrageous? Should we limit the right to legal costs? Should we limit hearings, et cetera? All of these things are aimed at difficulty of providing the service. What we're asking for in the study, and Mr. Lundquist's group came through with a much broader look at how to do the study, and we're very supportive of it, is all the issues need to be on the table, and we need to be taking a really good look at how we serve these kids, how we fund them, and the larger community needs to know more about it and how we get it done. And we think that this will kind of, I think if you look at what it says we shall do in the study, everything isn't in there that you should do, but you can't put everything in there. I think it's the charge is written broad enough that it clearly the task force or the commission knows or would know what needs to be looked at so that we can bring back to you in the next biennium good ideas about resolving some of these issues.
Representative Starr.
Good question. Thank you. I very much support the amendments, the task force. I've had situations in my school districts, in my district, where this is a problem. So I very much support where we're going with this. The question I have is, in the amendments, there is listed a series of assumptions. And you, what brought it up is you made a point. One of the questions you had was, do the teachers have too big of a load already? And according to the assumptions that are written in the bill, that's already answered. In page 3, line 8, teachers are at their workload limits. I'm concerned about the assumptions that are written into this bill already. We're laying the groundwork where we've already answered some of these questions, perhaps, in the amendment, Mr. Chair. You wish to comment on that and maybe some of the other assumptions that are listed here.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Starr, quite frankly, I wouldn't draft it. I knew it was in here that we're going to look at the workload. I don't think that's an assumption. I think the issue of workload is a very important issue and needs to be looked at. And if you want to redraft it so it's not an assumption, I have no quarrel with that. My view of legislation, they're not assumptions. They are issues that need to be addressed in the chart.
Mr. Chair, just a follow-up. It is very clearly stated that starting on page 2 on line 28, the task force shall operate under the following assumptions. And this list is A, B, C, D, E. And by and large, I don't have a problem with some of those. Some of them, I think, you're answering the questions that perhaps the task force should study. Appropriate support professional development must be available for teachers and educational staff to educate students with disabilities. True. But is that the right question? And should we talk about some additional opportunities for teacher training and support? Or is that off the table in this task force? The needs of all students are important. Absolutely, that's true. And it goes on and states another assumption. Maybe the things that are assumed in this task force are areas that the task force needs to look at. Teachers are at their workload limits. That's one that you brought up. Model system for all students. Now you include all students. And then you have a phrase, including those students with disabilities, who receiving special education related and related services includes early identification and intervention. You include all students. Anyway, those are some of my concerns, Mr. Chair, and you can comment or not. Clearly, you weren't involved in the drafting of the specific language of the amendments.
Is that a question?
Probably. You can comment.
Yes, Ozzie. Okay. Representative Starr is inviting a comment.
All right. Mr. Chair, Representative Starr, I'd have to visit with the folks who drafted, but I believe that these are the issues that need to be raised. And if they need to be raised a little different, say these are assumptions. To your specific one about early intervention and early identification and all students, that is an issue, not only with kids with specific disabilities, but all kids. And I believe that that's the intent of the language, and that if it needs to be drafted differently, fine with me. That for me, the issues are on the table, and you've got them in several different bills. We try to solve them piece by piece, and we're not getting anywhere.
Yeah.
And the bigger picture is how much money is involved and how many kids need services. One of the things I like about this, that there's going to be a broader section of the community become more and more aware of what this issue is. It's not just inside this building and inside the schoolhouses. And I think that's a plus in this effort. So rewording the assumptions, fine with me, as long as you still have the challenges to the committee about the issues that ought to be on the table. I hate coming in here and taking off bill by bill and arguing with you. I'm usually against it, whatever you're looking at, even sometimes when they're good ideas. But unless you look at all of them at once, the good ideas aren't very good ideas. And that's where we're headed with this.
Representative Barnhart.
If I could just comment, on Saturday I attended a meeting of educators, and one of them there was a special education teacher who essentially raised Representative Starr's issue and said, essentially, and a question that she asked, that teachers in that area may be substantially over their workload limits, so that the assumption stated in the bill is actually wrong, factually wrong. I guess I'm supporting the question in his question.
Yes, definitely. I am too.
Len, would you care to comment on Representative Starr's concerns?
Chair Backlund, Representative Starr, I certainly have no qualms whatsoever if they want to rewrite. Seems more completely or more precisely what we want to say here. I'll be honest, I've probably doing too much of trying to build an association and not maybe fine-tuning a particular bill. However, I don't want us to lose sight of the fact that we need a comprehensive look at this.
Yeah.
And that everything's open. The biggest challenge, and I was just talking to Ken Strobeck back there, the biggest challenge of this commission is going to be able to get their hands around the issue.
Yes.
Right.
And I mean, this is a huge, huge workload. And I'm not going in personally to my testimony with any preconceived ideas, but I understand your point, Representative Starr, and the committee wants to fine-tune that. That's fine with me.
Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, so we could, the point that Representative Starr and Representative Smith has raised, that teachers are at their workload limits. It could be rephrased, what should workload limits be for teachers? Something to that effect.
Well, Mr. Chair, I think the underlying problem I have is on page 2, line 28, where it says the task force will operate under the following assumptions.
Yeah.
I mean, let's take all these things off the table and let's look at everything.
Yeah.
I think
that would be fine.
The list of things they have as assumptions, they need to look at those too and not assume maybe anything.
Maybe they go under 5.
I agree, perhaps.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair?
Yes, Reverend
Starr. I think that our group is guilty, especially we added the workload issue to Mr. Lundquist's bill. And what we had in mind was, let's look at the workload issue as opposed to a bill that's already in saying the workload's too high. I don't know if it is or isn't. It is for my daughter, by the way, who does this kind of work, but I don't know about the rest.
Okay, well, good. Steve Johnson.
Anything to do. morning, Representative Backlund, members of the committee. My name is Steve Johnson. I'm the Associate Superintendent for the Office of Special Education, Oregon Department of Education. I'm here on behalf of the department today to support House Bill 2598, the -3 amendments. I should note that the written testimony you are receiving refers to -2 amendments with some proposed changes. Most of those proposed changes are reflected in the -3 amendment, so we do support those. You've heard testimony today from the business community, from teachers, from parent organization, and from administrators. And I will add my voice to that diverse group in support of this task force. Over the last several years, we've had several study groups, some legislatively appointed, some informally joining together, others called together by the department. This task force has the opportunity to give a comprehensive look at special education, to take the earlier work, to verify the information, to collect additional data, and to provide you and your colleagues with the information that you need to make data-informed decisions. Special education is in every school in the state. It's in every district in the state. Special education is a support to education. It is not a separate system of education. We appreciate your concern with the assumptions that are stated in here. We believe that this legislation should not propose answers, but should state questions, so that this task force can enter into this area objectively, considering issues from all over the state, collect the information that's required to make the recommendations to you. Special education is a zero reject program. No child who is eligible is denied services. Special education is a full service program. Whatever the child needs, it is that civil right to receive with no delay. Special education is highly regulated. And maybe that's why it's so emotional. It's so complex. But I want you to know that special education is also very optimistic about what education can provide to a child. That competing blend of emotions, complexity, and optimism that sometimes leads to an incomplete or an anecdotal view of special education. Good decisions are not based on anecdotes. Good policy is based on data. This task force can provide that to you. Next year, Oregon will be blessed with a visit from the U.S. Department of Education to examine special education under federal requirements. This is an opportune time for this task force to be joined, and it can examine from an internal perspective what's going on in special education and compare that to a federal view. In addition, this task force is poised to assist you as a legislature in commenting on and hopefully somehow assisting the Congress as it, in 2 years, begins to consider reauthorization of the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act. Because this task force will present you with hard data, with substantiated findings, and with what I hope to be very meaningful recommendations, you will be in a place then to forward those to our congressional delegation and, as appropriate, urge amendments to the federal law, which drives so much of what we do in the state. I do need to echo Ozzie's statement about the support that we need, Senate Bill 519, which will provide some financial assistance to this task force. And once again, I want to say to each of you, thank you very much for your concern for kids with disabilities, those who work with them, their parents, and I believe that this task force is just a further indication of your support of all kids in the state. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Steve. Questions? Very good. Is Miguel Salinas in the room at this point? He is not. Is there anyone else who would like to testify? Okay. I think
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Representative Hopson and I were kind of caucusing here on perhaps some substitute language, and if it's okay, if I just maybe relay that to the committee, the direction I said.
Okay, we're talking about here, what's the term?
The assumptions.
What type of amendment are we dealing with here, Janet?
Conceptual.
Conceptual?
Well, I'd take it less than council, right. But just to give the committee kind of the direction that I was heading.
Okay, fine.
It would be on page 2, lines 28, where it says the task force shall operate under the following assumptions. We just eliminate operate under the following assumptions and replace it with the task force shall investigate the following issue areas relating to students with disabilities receiving special education related services. So take the word assumptions out and just run to that.
Reactions?
I like that. Mm-hmm. I do.
Yes.
Okay. Well, very good. And I think we can bring this back in a week. And also, it's conceivable that Senate Bill 519 will have made it through, and so we'll know about that $150,000 in terms of the funding mechanism, and that would be very helpful. Janet, did you have a...
No, I just wanted to add that, Mr. Chair, Senate Bill 519 was just printed and engrossed today, and so probably it's going to be on the floor in another 2 to 3 days and on the Senate.
Okay.
Well, good. With that, then, we will close the public hearing on House Bill 2098, and we'll reopen the work session on House Bill 2004. When we last visited House Bill 2004, we had a motion to move the Dash 8s, and we wanted to wait until Representative Morissette and Representative Nelson could reappear in our committee because they were testifying in another committee room. So we're all here, and hopefully everyone is well aware of what the Dash 8s would do. And if we have more discussion, fine. If not, we're prepared to vote on it.
Well, Representative Morissette. I think I understand. Well, I do understand the Dash 8s, but I guess I need to think a little bit about whether or not, you know, what are the three measures that we will be dealing with on this Dash 8?
They're on there. Yeah.
Okay. Representative Barnhart, was that?
I was just going to answer his question, but it sounds like he's got it.
Okay.
Well, could you articulate why you want that rather than the overall measure?
Okay. The place you find that in the statute is on line 16 on page 1, where it says the superintendent of public instruction, based on the criteria adopted by the State Board of Education, shall assign grades to each school for student performance, student behavior, and school characteristics. I think as a summary, the argument in favor, there's several arguments in favor of that idea. The first one, as I understand it, is that, and I'll say it a slightly different way, I think, than other people did, is that the overall grade is a kind of an amalgam. It isn't really a statistically valid scoring, and it's based upon, I think, as Nancy Holligman said, a weighting of the underlying three grades that the department comes up with, which parents may or may not agree with as they review the grades themselves. That's one argument. The second argument, I think, is that the overall grade may not be particularly meaningful because it's an average or a summary, and if you look at the specific grades. Instead, you're more likely to see areas in which a poor school does well or a good school does less well, and therefore, you know, places where they're actually making what they should be doing or places, on the other hand, where they ought to be doing extra work. And so it's a more complete picture. My argument, which I don't know whether anybody else liked this or not, was that for people other than parents, when the newspaper publishes an overall grade, it is less meaningful and less useful than publishing the three specific grades. And the example I use is an elementary school in Eugene where the grade is I forget the top score, outstanding or excellent or whatever it is.
Exceptional.
Exceptional. but one of the subgrades may not be.
Yeah.
And at that point, it's really more meaningful for people to look at the subgrades because they'll understand that that school has areas to improve in this one spot, perhaps.
May I?
Yeah, please, follow up.
It's interesting because I just came from a hearing next door where I proposed a bill for performance-based budgeting, which is something that we really don't do in the state of Oregon. We talk a good game, but we don't do it. And I think this, you know, is kind of, I guess I would support Amendment 8 because it does break it down as I think it should be and makes it easier to understand, as Representative Barnhart said, where the weaknesses might be in the overall grade and where the strong points might be in the overall grade. And I think that is more of a performance-based measure than just a single grade. So I guess I will support.
Okay. Before going on, too, I wanted to address Representative Nelson's suggestion when she talked about student behavior. Representative Hobson, I think you brought out that student behavior now is far more than just attendance. Or Representative Nelson's benefit and mine, too. What are some of those other criteria?
The dropout rate, the number of, I think we ended up with the number of violent school safety issues, the number of suspensions or weapons. So there, it's more than just attendance now. That's included within the total revisions that we did to it.
Representative Hobson, is student behavior defined on the report cards when they're published?
That's a really good question, Mr. Chair and other members of the committee. We didn't talk about the exact format. The department is going to have to play with that a little bit. The one direction we did get was that it was still to be one page. So I would hope that, and that's a really good point to bring up, that there would be some indication in there. Now that we have more categories, it won't be as succinct as it was before, but I think it will be more meaningful.
More helpful, yeah.
And so I think we can certainly, I'm looking at Nancy, so
yeah,
I'm nod here and
yeah.
Say, yes, that's right.
Yeah,
yeah, good point.
Mr. Chair, I would like to see that, just to continue, if the department could do that. The criticism from one of the school districts in my district, you know, who would, okay, and this is what it's gone down to, they would have got an exceptional rating had it not been for their attendance. And they thought they took a bad hit in the press because they didn't explain why they got the second rating instead of the top rating. And so it is a competitive area within principals of school districts. And that's why I tend to wonder the effectiveness of this entire thing.
I agree.
The entire thing, not just the dash eights and sevens. But then that's not what we're dealing with today. Thank you.
Representative Nolan.
I'll pass this.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, Representative Nelson. Yes.
Am I just to understand this right, since I missed a bit of this? Dash 8 simply reduces an overall rating for a school, not a district, a school.
I believe that's correct.
Mm-hmm. I think that's the difference between the dash 7 and the dash 8.
Yes, that's right.
The dash 8 does a lot of other things,
yes.
But the distinction between the two amendments is
the
simply
overall
that line,
one
whether we have an overall grading or not.
Right. That's right. They are otherwise identical.
Yes. Okay. Paula, call a roll on this one, please. This is the dash 8s.
No.
Aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Nay.
No.
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 Star.
Aye.
Aye. What was that vote total?
Five to four.
Having received constitutional majority, the dash 8 are approved. And this will challenge my many statements that education is not necessarily a political issue. And we will see, because I suspect the Speaker will not be entirely pleased with this particular vote, but nonetheless, the vote has been made, and so I'm ready to entertain another motion, please.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Zahner.
I'd like to move House Bill 2004 to the floor for the defense recommendation, as amended.
Okay. Representative Zahner moves House Bill 2004 to the floor as amended with the due pass recommendation. Discussion? Representative Hoffman?
I just have to say a few words. Thank you, Mr. Speaker, or Mr. Speaker, Mr. Chair. I want to commend the people that worked on the group. This really was a good working group, and we did a lot of hacking and picking and discussing, and I just really commend everybody, particularly Harvey, who led a kind of diverse group. We addressed many issues in there, and Representative Starr and I were just kibitzing, because if any of you were here last time, you know that I was went out there carrying the no, 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 no. Gee, is that all I did last time then?
You and Ozzy?
Yeah. Ooh, don't put me and Harvey and I had discussions on that. But I do think this is another example, and maybe I'm just turning into a lemonade maker here in my old age, but it is one that I think will have a good benefit for people, and I could jump into the doesn't-do-any-good group, but I don't think we should go there. Because if nothing else, I think it does raise people's awareness, and I think having a perception out there as we move towards identifying the areas that we need to improve in, that can only lead to more pride in schools as they improve and as they work toward that, which then is the whole participation. There's more pride, there's more participation, the perception is greater, and I think it addresses the overall issue of improving the image and the work and the achievement of kids. And I think the bottom line, and I get a little hung up sometimes in this, the bottom line is achievement, and when you really look at it, that could be the only criteria, because I say that kids who are happy achieve, and the ones who are not achieving end up being unhappy, dropping out, and are the scourge of all the other problems we have. So I commend everybody on this and strongly support it.
Thank you. Janet, you have...
Mr. Chair, just wanted to make the committee aware they're passing this without a fiscal impact statement on the amendment, the new amendment. We did have a fiscal impact that was fairly high on the original bill. I've talked to Nancy Heiligman this morning, and the impact would not be significant, although the fiscal office has had different conversations with people at the department. The one thing that may reduce it, at least for the initial biennium, and be able to spread out any additional data collection costs, is that in the, we are on the dash 8, it does say data available to the Department of Education for these additional elements. I want to be sure that the committee doesn't automatically think each of these elements is will be on the very next report card, even though there is an emergency clause that it indicates that, that some of these elements, the data may not be good enough at this point to add them this, to the next report card. So that may reduce the cost, and indicated that it could be done under current service level to me this morning. So I just wanted to add that.
Thank you very much, Janet. That's excellent information. Representative Barnhart?
Thank you. I just was going to add to that that we had, in the work group, we had considerable conversation on exactly that issue. And what we ended up with, as Janet described, really was an attempt to avoid forcing some draconian, extraordinary data collection process. Instead, they can phase in the data collection process on the areas that they don't have good data, and some of the items are worded in such a way that they can use data that they have now and then improve it as they go along.
Thank you very much. And again, for maybe anyone who doesn't realize this, I think also kind of in conjunction with or at least the same time as the development of the quality education model, we developed the database initiative, which is, is that right, Nancy, which is kind of the basis of our information gathering. And that is an excellent tool, I think, that would benefit analyses of all different kinds. So I think with that, we have a motion on the well, the floor, I guess, and I think we should vote. So Paula, call the roll, please.
Aye.
Marzette?
Aye.
Nelson?
Aye.
Nolan?
Aye.
Smith?
No.
Star?
Aye.
Donner?
Aye.
Aye. Barnhart also votes aye.
Paula, did you call? Yeah. Having received the constitutional majority, I declare that House Bill 2004 passed. Close the work session, and we'll adjourn the committee.
Hey,
we're on fire, Mr. Chair.
Oh, a carrier. Oh, my goodness.
You don't have to do it on the record.
But anyway.
Is that when it was signed? You need some, no.
Okay, who wants to carry that bill?
Elaine.
Elaine. Okay, very good. Thank you. Okay.